Big, big day. Welcome back. We start hour number two. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio, I am Jim Rome. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices. Every day it's big day because Podcast Tuesday is always big around here, but especially today because it's a getaway Tuesday. It's a moving Tuesday. We are moving out of the studio where we have broadcast from for the last decade. We're down to our last couple hours in this studio, and again, I find the whole thing really surreal. I can't believe it's my last day in this studio when so many amazing things have happened here in this studio, and I also can't believe that I've been here a decade. So we're coming right down to it. I'm asking you for your favorite memories from this particular studio. I'm sharing some of mine. Hit me up, 1-800-636-8686. Coming up later on, I've got the head coach of the Portland Trailblazers, Terry Stotts. That's later on this hour. A Pac-12 Network college football analyst, Yogi Roth, in hour number three. But as promised, we're joined right now by a linebacker for the Arizona Cardinals. Not only that, but the NFC Player of the Week for Week 9. Three tackles, a pass defense, a fumble recovery in that Week 12 win over Jacksonville. For the season, 63 tackles, a sack, four passes defensed, an interception, a fumble recovery as well. And earlier this month, he became one of just five players in NFL history with 40 sacks and 20 interceptions. He played his college ball at Auburn. The Cardinals are hosting the Rams on Sunday. Carlos Dansby is my guest. Carlos, great to have you back. How are you?
Rome, I'm doing great, man. How about yourself?
Man, I'm great. Carlos, great to have you. All right, so let me first ask you about that tight win over Jacksonville on Sunday. The defense comes up big on the Jags' last two possessions. I've got to ask, what was going through your head as Phil Dawson came out for a 57-yard field goal attempt, and then what did you think when it went through to win it?
Oh, man, it was perfect, man. It was perfect. It was a great team win. To end it like that, you couldn't write it better. You know, defense make a big play. Offense score, really, on a big play, you know, and defense make a big play to stop them. We get back in position, and the special teams finish it, man. That's team ball. That's team ball, man. And we couldn't read it. We could have written that any better than it didn't play it out Sunday night.
Carlos Dansby joining us. You know, I'm always curious to see what you guys do to celebrate a big win like that, especially since wins in the NFL are so hard to come by. So when you get one, you better enjoy it. Did I see you celebrating with a steak and some lobster mash? And if so, how was it?
Yeah, man. No, we just bonded, man. The defense, man, defensive guys, man, we locking up right now, man. We just on a different level right now, mentally, you know, and as a unit, we just trying to play as one and do much as we can on the field and off the field. And like I said, we definitely had a steak at City Hall Restaurant. You know what I'm saying? Steak restaurant, man. It's perfect location, perfect vibe. You know, a nice steak, lobster mash, man. That's how you close it out.
Dude, that's got to be such a great night. I mean, honestly, when everybody's pulling in the same direction, when you're grinding out, when you're working that hard, and you find a way to get it done, that's got to be the best night ever. I mean, not to belabor that fact, but when you can get with your crew and the guys that you're going to battle with and have a nice steak after a win like that, that's got to feel so good.
Oh, man, it's great. It's perfect, man. Like you said, we went to battle. It was a tough-fought game against a great team. You know what I'm saying? Them guys playing well in all three phases as well. And like I said, for us to go out and win the game like we did, man, we had to celebrate it. And with a victory dinner.
Carlos Dansby is my guest. All right, so go back to earlier this month. The win over San Francisco and the performance that earned you Player of the Week for the NFC. There are a lot of things that we could talk about in that game, including the seven tackles and the sack. But I've got to ask you about the biggest play, your red zone pick that made history because it put you in that 40-sack, 20-interception club. First, take me through the play and how did it feel to come down with that interception?
First, through the play, like I said, it was perfect timing. I knew they was going to run like a little dig route behind me and one in front of me. So I kind of just tried to play in between both of them, and we got a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And all of a sudden, I just seen him duck and throw. And when I seen him duck and throw the ball, hit his lineman in the head, I like, oh, man, I didn't know 20 was going to be this easy for me. So I started smiling, man, grabbed it. And the first thing I was thinking, just get down, seal the win. Let's get up out of here and go celebrate, man. It's over, you know?
See, I think it's 20. It may have seemed easy at the time, but you've been chasing that interception for quite some time. Not to the point that you were ever going to be selfish and hurt the team in the process, but it had been a goal for a pretty long time. How does it feel then to be a member of the 40-20 club with guys like Seth Joyner, Ray Lewis, Wilbur Marshall, and Brian Urlacher?
It's huge, man. It's huge. I can't really put it. I can't really describe it and put it in words because it's 51 years of football, 52 years of football, and only four guys been able to do something like that. And for me to be the fifth guy in this era of football to do this, it's huge, man. It's motivating to a lot of people. You know, saying a lot of linebackers that's playing this game and future linebackers to play this game. And I'm just glad I had opportunity to allow them to bear witness to this. And put it in front of them and let them go chase it. You know what I'm saying? Because that's how Urlacher and Ray Lewis, Steph Joyner, these guys did it for me. They put it in front of me. So I had to go chase it, you know, and because I wanted to be one of the best to ever do it. And that was my goal when I first came into the league. And like I said, I'm getting closer and closer to it.
You're in that club, and nobody can take that from you. Now, after the game, Bruce Arians presented you with the game ball, and your teammates were clearly fired up. What did it mean to share that moment with them?
It was huge. It was huge because without them, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be able to do it in an Arizona uniform. And because, like I said, I could have did it in Cincinnati. I had plenty of opportunities to get interceptions in Cincinnati. I let the other guys get them because, like I said, it's about team. And this is an ultimate team game. So without those guys being in place and doing what they need to do, I wouldn't be able to have these individual accolades like I have right now with the 40 sacks and 20 interceptions. Everybody plays a part in it, on the field and off the field. You know what I'm saying? Taking care of my body, the whole nine. So everybody gets an opportunity to experience, you know what I'm saying, the 40-20 club, man. It's a beautiful thing to have family and friends and loved ones, guys who care for me, just, you know, be a part of this.
Carlos Dansby joining us. You know, to that point, Steve Keim said something kind of funny afterwards. The GM, he said, after watching your post-game speech, quote, "You may be one of the worst speech givers I've ever heard." So you guys go way, way back. But, I mean, as part of this, I've never known you, Carlos, to be somebody at a loss for words. Were you overcome by emotion in the moment, thinking about all the people who have been a part of your journey? Was that part of it?
That was totally it. You know, I had to thank the guys that was there. You know, I had to thank God personally for, you know, giving me a gift, you know, and let me, you know, get closer to one of the desires in my heart. You know, like I said, that's something I wanted to do when I first came in the league. I mean, the first interview at the Combine, I told Coach Dennis Green I wanted the yellow jacket. I wasn't worried about no Super Bowls. I wasn't worried about no Pro Bowls, nothing else but the yellow jacket. The gold jacket, my bad, and I don't want to be disrespectful to the game, gold jacket. And he asked me, do I know what that entails? I said, yeah. I said, it entails of me dedicating myself, being disciplined and you know, making a lot of sacrifices. And he was like, well, you don't want nothing else. I said, if I'm playing at that level, everything else will come. So, but I've been able to do it with no Pro Bowls. So it's kind of special to me, you know, and – like I said, I'm still hunting, man. I'm still hunting. I got more to do. I got more left in me. And I want to catch everybody that's in this class. I want to surpass everybody.
Carlos Dansby joining us. All right, so you're still hunting, and you've still got some good football in you. You've played 14 years now. I mean, the league is so different now, and the game is so different now than when you got in. Most NFL careers are pretty short. So how are you able to still play at such a high level this far into your career? What's been the secret?
My cup is never full, Jim. My cup is never full. I'm always learning, finding new ways to do things. And like I said, my determination to be the best is going to allow me to evolve with the game. And that's what I've been able to do. That's what separates me from everybody else. I've been able to evolve. I see what the game is turning into, and I just evolve with it. And once you can't adapt anymore, once you can't adapt, man, you're going to die, period, to any and every situation that you're involved in life. You got to be able to adapt to the situation. If you can't adapt to the situation is dead, period. So I'm going to adapt. I'm going to survive. And I'm going to, you know, prove a lot of people wrong.
Right. On top of that, you're the pride of Auburn University. I've got to ask, how did it feel to watch your guys beat Alabama on Saturday? How'd that feel?
Oh, man, I was celebrating all night. Celebrating all night. Because I told people, man, I'm like, man, y'all just don't understand. We're finna beat Alabama. Everybody want to say, man, ain't no way. You know, what bet? Put your money on it. They were scared, man. Them boys were scared. You seen it. I seen it. I knew it after we beat Georgia the way we beat Georgia the first time. Everybody was nervous. All the Alabama fans was nervous. And they got exactly what was coming to them. You know, they knew they were going to get beat.
Yeah, think about that matchup too. Carlos, there was nothing gimmicky about that. There was no trickery.
Right.
There was nothing fluky about that. I mean, they straight up lined up and punched him in the head and won that game. Now, for those who have never experienced that rivalry as a player, how would you describe it? Is there anything that you can compare to the intensity of Auburn v. Alabama?
Man, funny you say that, Rome. I spoke to the linebackers the night before, and my exact words to them was, it's nothing else like it. I haven't played in the Super Bowl. I'm an NFC champion. I made plays in the Super Bowl. But I told them, I said, man, it's nothing like this game, period. Period. I said, man, every snap that y'all play, y'all going to be legends. Every snap. So whatever play that's being made, it's going to be in the history books forever. I mean forever. Your grandkids going to be able to see that. Like, so that's the kind of message I had to get to those guys the night before. And I just told them, man, just lock in. I said, y'all got the talent. Y'all got all the tools. I said, but go be legends. I said, man, that's what this game is all about. And, man, they was locked in. They was ready to roll. And they went and played well.
Quote, go be legends. Go be legends. Every single thing matters. Every single play matters. Rams are at the Cards on Sunday. Carlos Dansby did it. He is officially a member of the 40-20 Club. Carlos, I know you're angling for that. I know you've been working on that. You got it. They can't take it from you. It's great to have you back on the show, man. Thank you very much. And I know you've got football left.
Man. Thank you, brother.
We'll be doing it again.
Thank you so much.
You know we'll do it again, Carlos.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate you. Carlos Dansby. My thanks to him. 40-20. Well, that's a great club to be in. 40 sacks, 20 picks. And again, if you get your names mentioned alongside the guys that I mentioned before, Seth Joyner, Ray Lewis, Wilbur Marshall, Brian Urlacher, we're talking about dudes with gold jackets. And he still says, there's still nothing. I've been in the Super Bowl. I'm an NFC champion. I'm a member of the 40-20 Club, but there is nothing like Auburn v. Alabama. And he told those guys, go be legends. Go be legends. All right, we'll break. When we come back, I want to talk more about moving day. The last 10 years in this studio, what are some of your favorite memories? I'm going to share some of mine when we come back. Terry Stotts coming up in about 25 minutes. Yogi Roth coming up next hour. It's Podcast Tuesday. Daryl Morey, Rockets GM, is the lead guest for episode 15, which drops later on today. You know, you think about all the things that we do to keep ourselves warm when it's cold outside, and it's getting really cold. Big, thick coats, gloves, scarves, hats. Some of you even like to drop those heat packs in your feet and for your hands. I get it. Nobody wants to be cold.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Since we were moving today, we're talking about the last 10 years we've been in the studio. And I'm asking you to share some of your favorite memories as I'm sharing some of my favorite memories. All right, so my thanks to Carlos Dansby. I've got Terry Stotts coming up next segment. Today is a wild day. There is so much going on, in a good way, but a lot going on. All right, in terms of the memories, at Dream Space 2 hits on something that many of you are bringing up right now. He writes, November 5, 2015. Lance calls in and says he's going to, quote, fart in your face to Larry. Only time I know of in show history where at Jim Rome lost it. Literally 5 seconds of dead air as he and Kyle Brandt collect their thoughts. Mark in Hollywood tweets, picturing the reaction to Lance's fart in your face call when at Jim Rome did not come back to the mic for 30 seconds was epic. Well, fact of the matter is, if something like that were to ever happen again, and it won't, but if it were to ever happen again, you will see the reaction because this show will be on TV starting January 2nd. But a number of you have responded to my question, what are some of the things you remember most about this show in the past 10 years in this studio? You've reset that very call. Flash Lance, what's up?
Hey, not too much, Jim. Thanks for letting me on. And hey, Mikey De La Creme, thanks for the vote of confidence. So, Jim, after Call Apocalypse, you know, I wasn't planning on calling the show anymore, but I also wasn't planning on Parody Larry coming in and glossing me flatulence. Really, Larry? Where'd you get that one? From the 9-year-old you tried to lure to the back of your van by telling him, hey, kid, well, you want some candy? You know what, Larry? Screw it. I will embrace the flatulence gloss. I'm going to fart in your face with the music of the four times.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Flatulence. Flatulence.
Right, somebody jump in there for 1 minute, Alvin.
Flatulence.
So he Alvin's dropping flatulence, because really I couldn't recover. I turned my mic off. And I'm not laughing at that time because it was so funny. Maybe in disbelief. I don't even know what was going through my mind. I just know that I really could not get leverage on it. I couldn't get control of the situation. I hadn't lost it like that over something on this show since anything really dating back to Monica Seles's beaver-like chompers. And at that point, I was pretty much out of commission for about 30 seconds. But Alvin just kept popping, flatulence. He was doing it to cover because I couldn't get it right. I couldn't get back. I couldn't make it right. So that's how that sounded in real time. And a number of you brought that up. JC in Calgary tweets, that time Toby in Houston called and Jim was practically speechless. You guys should reset that today for old time's sake. Yeah, great. Nice try, JC. Except that Toby did not make that call into this studio. So no, I'm not going to play it again. In fact, I already did play it again for you. It was part of Rome Again. You remember? Bella B is in. She says, hearing at Bodie in Pearland choke his way to a sweet flat screen TV.
Look here, Israel. You want to know how to rap? Let me show you, Bubba. Let me thaw it down. Texas is the home of the ballers and pimps. Straight out the womb home, boy. We walking with the lip. Not because we lame, because we hung like Tory. Yeah, you know the story. I got a Bodie motif painted on my hood. I ain't sporting gold teeth because they made out of wood. So when I chat my teeth, you think I'm knocking at your door. Come strong, Israel, because your ass in a war. Well, dog, man, I almost choked on my spit. That rapping game is hard, dog. But anyway, Bubba, that's it. I think I won with that little rap. I love you, Bubba, and I'm going to keep listening.
And for the record, he did win with that little rap. That was Bodie. And we were giving away a plasma flat screen, and he was able to rip it. He wasn't going to until he choked at the end of the rap. That rapping game's hard, dog.
Well, Bub.
Hey, Israel, come strong because you're ass in a war. Love you too, Bubba. Bubba, reset that. Let's see some other great memories. Personally, when I think back, I have to admit, over the past decade in this studio, and if you're just now joining us, this is our last day in this studio, so we're looking back over the past decade. One of my favorite moments in this studio was my live read of my movie, Space Jam. Some of you may, in fact, not even know that I was in Space Jam, starred in Space Jam, carried Space Jam. They pretty much built that movie or made that movie around me, Space Jam, that classic movie. So to commemorate that, I had a live read right here in studio where I played myself, Kyle Brandt played 45's kid, and naturally, the high school state basketball champ, Alvin freaking DeLauro, played Michael Jordan himself. It was another career day for Michael Jordan at Barron's Field this afternoon. Let's face it, this baseball experiment is just not working.
Hey, what are you guys watching?
Today he went 0 for 4 with 3 strikeouts.
Is this the only thing on TV?
That brings your batting average down to an anemic 214, which also happens to be his playing weight. Baseball bat, get this guy a tennis racket.
Did everyone get mad at you?
No, worse. Everyone was real nice about it.
Michael, I know golf is your sport, but not here.
I think you should open up your stance a little. Might make you more aggressive at the plate.
You think so? I'll try to remember that.
Watching this hurts me more than it hurts you.
What are you guys doing watching this stuff? It's bad for you.
Michael, what is that?
And cut.
Yeah.
See, I got it.
Yeah.
I still got it.
I do still have it. I still got it. That was one of my favorites. That was awesome. How about this day? This was seriously one of the most iconic and legendary days in the history of this show, in this studio or any other studio. September 10th, 2010, an amazing day in jungle folklore. It was the famous scene from Happy Days where Fonzie jumped the shark And that somehow became a topic on the show. You know, we were talking about jumping the shark. So we played the clip. All right, so you know how this goes. We all know that scene. Clones always think that they're smarter than the show, so then they decide to call in with what they thought they heard during that. Check this out. Chris in Houston, you are first up.
Hey, Rome, I was listening to that take with the Fonz jumping the shark, and if you listen closely, he's not saying, hey, I tell Potsy I do this. It is Brett Favre saying, I told Percy I do this.
Seriously, that's what you're hearing?
I'm hearing it, Rome, loud and clear.
That's raw audio taken from Happy Days. How could Brett Favre have been anywhere near the set when that happened?
I have no idea. I don't know if one of your guys taped over it or something, or somehow it got looped over.
Percy wasn't even alive when they shot that scene, when he jumped the shark. How could it be Percy?
I'm just saying, that's what I heard, and I think if you listen closely, that's Brett Favre saying, I told Percy I'd do it.
All right, so that's what he said he heard. I mean, we all listen to that, and we all hear something different, right? What about Wally in Houston? What did he hear? Wally in Houston.
I just got on YouTube myself, and someone is pulling your chain because that is Brett Favre in the background saying Percy.
Are you kidding? I mean, that's really what you're hearing. You don't think that Fonzie said it?
No, I know he didn't. I just got on YouTube. I looked at every version. Someone's pulling your chain, man. There's no way. I can hear Brett Favre clearly.
Okay, so you've seen every version. Have you seen the version that I'm playing? Have you seen that version?
I don't know which one you're playing, but I know what I'm listening to and what I'm seeing. I can't see his lips moving.
All right, so I said that he said, I told Potsy I'd do this. And yet clones were arguing with me. That's not what he said. Some of you, though, luckily understood that's exactly what he said.
I was listening to your show this morning, and it's just amazing to me that this has come up today. Because just this past weekend, my son and I were out, and we had just dropped off my daughter at the porn studio. And luckily for us, we've got an underground cockfighting ring right next door. So me and my son went in there, and we sat down right next to Ralph Mouth. And Ralph Mouth told me that the only reason that Fonzie jumped that shark was because he told Potsy that he'd do it. So I think we can put an end to this whole thing with this third-party testimony.
All right, so the bottom line is, somebody said, hey, you know, I told Potsy I'd do this. Or somebody emailed us and said, hey, Rome, remember when he said, before he made that jump, I told Potsy I'd do this. You know, like, I told Percy I'd do this. The whole thing took on a life of its own after Brett Favre said, I told Percy I'd do this. Hey, Rome, remember when Fonzie jumped the shark and before he did so, he said, I told Potsy I'd do this. So Alvin dropped in the I told Potsy, and then it took on a life of its own. Yet a bunch of morons were running around on YouTube trying to find the actual raw clip saying, no, Rome, somebody's jerking your chain. He didn't say it. And I stuck to my guns. He said it. I'm telling you he said it. So then all of a sudden, this whole thread is running through this show because there's always that small percentage of the audience that does not get the joke. So I'm sticking to my guns, and then lo and behold, before the end of the program, Fonzie himself calls this show. We didn't find him. We didn't call him. Over the course of the entire program, this bit had worked its way back to Henry Winkler, who was on location in Vancouver shooting a movie. And he called in to set the record straight as to whether or not, before he went up that ramp to jump that shark, that he had told Potsy that he would do it. He was going to set the record straight. I had no idea what he would say because, again, he got the hotline number and he called us. We didn't call him. A bit that we did the entire show worked its way back to the guy that we were talking about.
The fact of the matter is that all through the episodes, I was always plagued by Potsy, but I always kept my word. So I said, hey, I told Potsy I would do this and put my thumb up and jumped the shark.
For the record, one of my favorite days ever. We're doing this joke, and Fonzie himself, who I had never spoken to, called the show on his own, and I wanted him to set the record very clearly. Did you tell Potsy that you would do that before you made that jump?
Yes. There's another episode where he wants to be my best friend, and he takes me roller skating. So all through the series, I was plagued by Potsy, and that's what I said.
So there's always this rumor around this town that Henry Winkler was the best guy in Hollywood, like the nicest guy in this town, the best guy ever. So he literally calls the show, plays along like a total pro, goes through with it. And then in the end, when we had a Clone's Choice Award ceremony, he then came back on in December to accept what was then the CCA. You've probably got an entire trophy room full of awards. Where would you rank this one?
Well, this one is going right between me and my wife on our bed.
Perfect. How does she feel about that?
Well, you know what? She has no say. I've won from the Jim Rome Show. What can I say?
Henry Winkler was so awesome. At the time, also, when we let him know that he was going to win the CCA, his thing was, well, what do I get? I'm like, we don't really have anything to give you, Fonz. He said, no, really, I need something. I want something. And he, in a very nice way, he was pushing us to give him something to commemorate it because he thought it was awesome. He goes, it doesn't even matter what it is, a certificate, anything at all. So we came up with the Rome bobbleheads, and that's what he got for a trophy. So anyway, that to me was always one of my favorite moments. So we just had this weird, organic bit. It was a bit that was totally organic. A bit where one of the clones said, hey, Rome, remember when Henry Winkler, before he jumped the shark, said, I told Potsy I'd do this? I told Percy? Remember, Fonz said, I told Potsy? And then Alvin went with it, and I went with it, and a bunch of morons were calling up saying, nope, never happened, Rome. I've watched it a million times. It was my favorite show. And then I just kept stringing them and clowning them. And then lo and behold, Fonzie himself called. Fact of the matter is, somebody in L.A. was listening and said, hey, Henry, I know you're working today, but there's a really funny thing happening on the radio right now involving you and the jump, the shark jump. I got nowhere to go, Alvin. I'm moving today, man. They can wait. I was like, dude, end the bit. We got to go. You go where, man? Are you going to fire me? They can't go without me. Anyway, last thought. Somebody called the Fonz up and said, call Rome. And we had no connection, and he did it. Legend. Great moment. When we go, I do have to go. I got a guest coming up. Time for a sports update. Here it is.
Live from Southern California. This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
When it gets cold out there, your car needs some extra attention, from choosing the right antifreeze for your engine to replacing your windshield wiper blades. O'Reilly Auto Parts will help you get your car in fighting shape for the cold weather ahead. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. As promised, we're joined right now by the head coach of the Portland Trail Blazers. He is in his sixth season in that capacity. Led Portland to the playoffs the last 4 years. Portland beat the Knicks 103-91 last night. They're in first in the Northwest Division, and they're hosting Milwaukee. Key matchup on Thursday night. Terry Stotts is my guest. Terry, it's so good to have you back. How are things, Terry?
Things are going well, Jim. How about you?
I'm doing great. It's always good to visit with you. Thanks so much for doing this. Why don't we start last night with that win over New York? Damian Lillard had 32 points, 5 assists. Terry, it seems like every great player loves the challenge of playing at the Garden. So what did you make of his performance last night?
I thought he was really good. He had 11 in the first quarter, and I think he may have had 13 in the third quarter. So he got us off to a really good start in both halves. We kind of had a little slippage in the fourth quarter when he was out, and then he came back and just did a nice job of leading us in the end when things got a little frazzled. But he's having a terrific season, and I think everybody knows how I feel about him. He's been a great leader on the team, and he's all about doing what's best for the team.
You know, I think that everybody knows how you feel about him, and now we know how he feels about you. He was talking about how when players come there, they always talk about what a great situation it is and how the culture is so good. But you had a road trip, and it featured a 17-point comeback at Washington on Saturday, which was your birthday. After the game, the players signed the ball, they gave it to you, and then Lillard said, quote, "I think one thing about our coach is we play for a great coach, but we know that we play for an even better person. I wouldn't rather play for any other coach. I hope he's happy with the effort tonight. We got a crazy win for him," end of quote. I mean, that's really something. Number one, how was the win? And then what did it mean to hear something like that from a player like that?
Well, the win was exceptional. To have that win, that kind of win, on my 60th birthday was was pretty special. But, you know, Damian and I came in together, and we've been through a lot of ups and downs together. And we both, I think, really appreciate what we have. And, you know, for him to say that publicly, it means a lot. You know, in the pro game, you don't get that as much as maybe you do in high school or college, where there's a different dynamic to the relationship. And for an NBA player to say that about his coach is pretty meaningful.
Yeah, I think you said that even much better than I did, Terry. I think that's very true. You don't hear that very often from an NBA player, and you don't hear that very often from an NBA superstar. He's also said that when guys do come from other organizations, they always tell him, quote, "You're lucky that this is where you've always been. It's a good organization, and it's not like this everywhere," end quote. So how would you describe the attitude and the approach of the organization and the coaching staff? What makes it different from other spots around the league?
Well, I'm really, you know, I'm biased. I'm really proud of what we've developed here in Portland. I think it starts with Neil Olshey and the type of players that he brought in, and he's made it a players-first organization. We bring in good people. When people come from different programs, there's an understanding of how we do things. We're respectful of each other. We're respectful of being on time. I've had to do very little fining in my time here because, you know, we do things the right way. And I think it just makes it easier if there's an understanding that what professionalism is. And I try to be fair. I try not to, you know, be obnoxious with a lot of rules, but, you know, there's a certain professionalism that is adhered to. And I think it just trickles down. But like I said, I think it starts at the top. And then once you've established it, it's like a college program in that once you've established it, like in San Antonio, it's easier to maintain. The hard part was those first two or three years where you're establishing who you are as a program.
It seems to me, and the key word there is development, the way you go about developing guys. I mean, it's a two-way street, right? You might have a plan, but they've got to want to work that plan for you. So how do you go about evaluating players and deciding whether or not they're a good fit for how you approach that developmental work?
Well, again, I go back to Neil Olshey. I think he's done an outstanding job in the draft over the years. You look at whether it's Damian or C.J. McCollum or Will Barton, Myers Leonard, we got Pat Connaughton, who is now starting. It's just he drafts talent. He drafts good people who want to work, and we're able to just develop it. Now, as far as the development of the players, I have an outstanding coaching staff who love to be in the gym, who love spending time with the players in the gym, taking them out to dinner, developing the relationships that, you know, they're able to – they want to get better. And they want to work with the coaches. And it's not a drudgery for my assistant coaches to be in the gym and spend time with the players. And the players feel that. They know sincerity, and they know when it's not sincere. And I think that goes a long way.
Terry Stotts joining us for a few more moments. You know, you beat Memphis earlier in the road trip. And then yesterday there was the announcement that the Grizzlies had fired David Fizdale. I mean, the NBA coaching fraternity is a very small one. So what's your reaction when you see a coach getting fired before the end of November?
You know, no matter when a coach gets fired, there's empathy. No one really knows what's going on within the organization, but one thing we've all been through it is how you navigate losing and dealing with expectations is very difficult. And I think there has to be patience. I think there has to be understanding. You hate to be reactionary, and you know, I say reactionary. I mean, as a coach, you can't be reactionary to a losing streak. General manager or ownership, I think there has to be an understanding of where the team is and where it's going. And what needs to be done. And I very seldom comment on other organizations and the decisions that they make in a variety of areas. But as a coach, and you see a coach with the success that David had last year and the injuries they were dealing with this year, it's just, it's very disappointing, very frustrating from a coaching standpoint, because it's a tough job. And I think everybody has to understand the ebb and flow of an NBA season.
Listen, I respect where you're coming from, because you're right. I mean, it's not your place to talk about somebody else's situation. And far be it for me to say it, because I'm not there. I just find it hard to believe that a guy like that, with that kind of pedigree and the success he's had there, is relieved of his duties when there's so many other injuries and so many other things going on. But we can pick that up a little bit later. Before you go, Terry, Yusuf Nurkic, 12-9-6 last night. Ever since he came over in the trade last season, he seems to have fit in extremely well. But now that you've had more time with him, what do you make of his game and the way he impacts everybody else on the court?
Well, he's had a huge impact on our team. Most significantly was at the end of the last year. You know, he hasn't picked up the same stride that that he was with us at the end of the season last year. But, you know, the thing I have to keep remembering for me and coaching him is that he's still only 23 years old. And he didn't, you know, even though he's been in the league for a few years, it's still relatively new having this responsibility and being consistent and playing at this level. And there's so much room for him to grow. And what makes it easier for me and my staff is that he wants to get better. He wants to be a great teammate. He's very appreciative of playing with Damian Lillard because of his leadership. But, you know, for a young player, no matter where you are in this league, is about doing it the same thing every night. And, you know, he had a great night the other night, I believe it was against Brooklyn. But his challenge, like any other young players, is to do it every night.
Portland in first in the Northwest Division. They are at home against Milwaukee on Thursday night. Terry Stotts, their head coach, has led them to the postseason the last 4 years. Terry, you know, goes without saying, it's always great to have you in the jungle and great to get caught up. Thanks so much for doing that, and I know we'll do it again soon.
All right, thanks for having me, Jim.
Always good to talk to you, Terry. Thanks very much. Terry Stotts doing a great job as always. And they are in first, and they've got a critical matchup Thursday against Milwaukee. Blazer fans, I know there are a lot listening. If you want to jump in, go ahead. What do you think of what you've seen from your team so far this year? As we look ahead to hour number three, here's what we need to get done. It is my last hour. Man, even today is going fast, really fast. Today is our last hour in this studio. We're looking back on some of the great moments of the past decade in this studio. In fact, I ran heavy in that last segment prior to Terry Stotts coming in, but I didn't actually finish the thought about the Fonz. There's one more part to the Fonz story. And again, my favorite thing about that, it was so organic. Again, a clone brought up a bit. We ran with the bit. We kept the bit going. And by the end of the show, the Fonz himself called, and we had no connection to him prior. That's how good of a guy he was. Some of my favorite moments obviously involve you clones, but some of my favorite moments also involve other celebrities or public figures that have just rolled with the program that had no connection to the program. That's coming up next hour. Yogi Roth is a great guest always. Also coming up next hour. And I'm looking for you to share your thoughts. When you look back on the last decade and my time in the studio, what are your favorite memories? That's next, hour number three, straight ahead. Don't go anywhere.